from deep inside your radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, I think this is the weekend that Barack Obama begins to understand why so many American politicians attend the Episcopal Church. And speaking of politics, the word change has been almost below the threshold of consciousness. It just came to my consciousness. Maybe it's been in yours. They used to be called political consultants. Now, all of a sudden, this year, they're strategists. You know, the guys who show up to yak on behalf of one or the other of the candidates on the political yak shows. 4 years ago, they were consultants. But that's not good enough now. They're strategists. It's just a thing. Just a thing. Just some random notes in the news, ladies and gentlemen. A British lord told Parliament recently that a representative from Energy Solutions Incorporated had offered to accept British radioactive waste at the company's disposal facility in Utah. So there's a Utah congressman saying, "Are we turning into Europe's dump?" Quote, "My fear that the current proposal to import Italy's waste was just the tip of the iceberg seems valid based on this news out of Great Britain," he says. "If we don't set limits on foreign waste now, where will all this end?" Hey, you know, we could do worse. We're not the world's breadbasket anymore. We're not the world's manufacturing powerhouse. Why not be the world's nuclear dump? Seriously. Really. Come on now. Dear Harry, a listener named Steve says, in your segment, reading the trades last week, you quoted a story about Scripps Networks and their seeming inability to get people to watch the HD feeds of their cable networks instead of the standard definition channels. They postulated that perhaps location on the dial played a factor. I can attest that as an HD TV owner, I'm well aware of the dial location of the HD versions, and yet I choose not to watch those feeds for one simple reason. The programming is not in HD. The vast majority of the programming on those two networks, HDTV and Food, was filmed in and meant to be displayed in the standard 4:3 aspect ratio. To broadcast these programs on their HD channels, Scripps upconverts the content to high definition and stretches the 4:3 content to fit the 16:9 ratio of HDTV. The result of this stretching is a disorienting and ugly effect where everything not at the dead center of the screen is badly distorted, which is particularly noticeable in people's faces. I, for one, cannot stand to watch this distorted programming, and instead I choose to watch the standard channel, which looks far more lifelike. Signed, Steve. So, and, you know, it does strike me as odd, ladies and gentlemen, that actresses in this town, especially Southern California, not a town, but you know what I mean, a town where, I guess, imminent means the same thing to Daily Variety as it does to George W. Bush. Actresses in this town will starve themselves to look slender enough on film so they can be in a hit movie and go on the road to promote it and stay in first-class hotels where they have widescreen TVs that stretch the picture that makes them look fat. It's just this nutty world we live in. From the Los Angeles Dog Trainer, a headline on an article in the May 22nd California section about a poverty simulation held in downtown Los Angeles said, quote, "Salvation Army shows issues faced by poor trying to make a living." The simulation was held at a Salvation Army facility, but it was not sponsored by them. And in the same story, misattributed a quotation to Lisa Adler, a member of the bus riders union. It was another participant who said, quote, "I wanted to punch out the banker. Each week we were sinking a little. We were so desperate," unquote. What Adler said, which was not in the article, was, quote, "Transportation is a huge issue. A lot of people couldn't get to the grocery to get food." It's so similar, quote, really, when you stop to think about it, which you shouldn't. Hello, welcome to the show.
I hear your mama calling you. You can't run and hide.
Presbyterian's a good safe choice, too. From the edge of America, from the home of the homeless, I'm Harry Shearer welcoming you to this edition of Le Show. And now, ladies and gentlemen, time for the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
First, from Liz Trotta, a Fox News contributor.
I am so sorry about what happened yesterday and a lame attempt at humor. I really just fell all over myself in making it appear that I wished Barack Obama harm, or any other candidate for that matter. I sincerely regret it and apologize to anybody I've offended. And it's a very colorful political season, and many of us are making mistakes and saying things that we wish that we hadn't said.
Clarification noted.
Yeah, and nice, sincere reading, too. Apology number two, former White House Press Secretary Scott McClellan.
I got caught up in the Washington permanent campaign culture just like everybody else. In terms of Dick Clark, I actually ran into him in New York the other night. I actually apologized to him. I had not read the book.
What did you say?
And
to
here
him?
I was. We had a brief conversation, and I said, I basically said, I apologize for what I was saying about you then. I had not read your book.
By the way, when he says Dick Clark, he doesn't mean who you think Dick Clark is. He means Richard Clark, the former terrorism coordinator for the White House, whom Scott McClellan slammed in 2004 when Clark wrote a book critical of the White House, saying, well, why didn't he say those things then? Why is he waiting until he has a book out?
Sorry, sorry, sorry.
Scott's sorry now. Deadline Beijing, French fashion house Christian Dior says it has dropped Sharon Stone from its Chinese ads and released a statement from the actress apologizing for saying China's earthquake may have been bad karma for its treatment of Tibet. The 50-year-old actress,
really?
Said she was deeply sorry for causing anguish and anger among the Chinese people with her remarks in an interview last week. As you know, Barack Obama moved to distance himself from the guest preacher at Trinity Baptist Church, finally quitting the church last night. Obama released a statement saying he was deeply disappointed in Father Flager. Flager issued his own apology. I regret the words I chose last Sunday. Those words are inconsistent with Senator Obama's life and message, and I am deeply sorry if they offended Senator Clinton or anyone else who saw them. Also, a religious-related apology. The U.S. military suspended a Marine this week for distributing coins quoting the gospel to Sunni Muslims, an incident that has enraged Iraqis who view it as the latest example of American disrespect for Islam. The Marine stationed in the western city of Fallujah handed out silver-colored coins this week that said in Arabic, "For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son, blah, blah, blah," John 3:16. Sorry, I don't mean to blah, blah, blah the Bible there, but you've heard it before. "We are sorry for this behavior," says Mike Esho, a U.S. military spokesman at Anbar, which includes Fallujah. He said the Marine, whom he did not identify, distributed only a few of the coins. The episode was under investigation. "This incident doesn't represent the morals of the Marines," he said. Marines are against giving away coins? Deadline Atlanta, the world's largest builder of nuclear reactors, apologized to regulators this week over a shipment of equipment that contained a radiation hotspot that exceeded federal guidelines and traveled more than 400 miles from Virginia to Tennessee. A team of inspectors said the quarter-sized spot, hey, that's about the size of a, say, John 3:16 coin, which was located on cleaning equipment in a shipment by Areva, measured 10 times higher than the level of radiation allowed by regulators for transport. Areva said its own test showed that the hotspot was 4 times higher than federal limits. keep sending your ways to us, folks, by the way. Sentenced to home detention for defrauding the Indiana Democratic Party, Kim Bostick faced a final request Wednesday this week from a judge. She read aloud the definition of the word karma. Detention, Sharon Stone. Bostick, the Indiana Democratic Party's former comptroller, had opened an unauthorized credit card, used it for items including clothes, jewelry, and out-of-state trips, totaling at least $62,000. After she read about karma, the judge asked a tearful Bostick to consider the importance of the words for her future. Bostick apologized to party officials who were not present. She's repaid about $11,000. An unwitting passenger arriving at Japan's Narita Airport has received 142 grams of cannabis, marijuana to you and me, after a customs test went awry, officials said. A customs officer hid a package of the banned drug in a side pocket of a randomly chosen suitcase in order to test airport security. Sniffer dogs failed to detect the drug, and the officer could not remember which bag he put it in. Anyone finding the package has been asked to contact customs officials. "This case was extremely regrettable. I would like to deeply apologize," said the head of customs at the airport, Manpei Tanaka. I knew that using passengers' bags is prohibited, but I did it because I wanted to improve the sniffer dog's ability. The dogs have always been able to find it before. I became overconfident that it would work," said the customs officer. The Ho Chi Minh Stock Exchange, which has the abbreviation HOSE, reopened this week after technical problems that caused a three-day halt in trading. They were resolved, the general director said at a press briefing this week. "We feel ashamed of the problems which have occurred. We apologize for not informing to exchange members about the problems in time," unquote. Clovis, New Mexico School Superintendent Rhonda Seidenworm says the school district will have more oversight over next year's yearbook after a controversy this year over a section that included two lesbian couples. Seidenworm took responsibility for not reinstating an oversight policy and apologized to parents and Clovis residents who were offended by lesbian couples shown in the section on relationships, which also featured photos of nine heterosexual couples. Ugh. The school district will hold public study sessions to develop a policy on oversight of student publications. Some local religious groups, a former lieutenant governor, and others have criticized the 2008 yearbook. Students on the yearbook staff have defended their decision to include the gay couples. The Clovis superintendent apologized. Project Runway star Christian Siriano has apologized for the derogatory comments about transsexuals he made in a current Time Out New York interview. In the interview, openly gay Siriano, who became infamous for using the term hot tranny mess on the Bravo reality series, said, if you think of heterosexuals, they have white trash women and trailer parks, and we have drag queens and trannies, unquote. Siriano's comparison infuriated many of his fans, prompting the Maryland native to tell the Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation, GLAAD, quote, "I mean no disrespect to the transgender population, and I never will. Some of my close friends happen to be transgender, and I think they're some of the most inspiring people in my life. I completely support the fabulousness and amazing fashion inspiration that most transgender people provide," unquote. Kind of sorry. A delegation of British Baptists has apologized in Jamaica for Britain's role in the transatlantic slave trade that claimed millions of lives and shaped the Caribbean's history. Jonathan Edwards, General Secretary of the Baptist Union of Great Britain, told islanders in the former British colony, "We have heard God speaking to us. We repent of the hurt we have caused." About 1,000 Clayton County, Georgia high school students walked across the stage, shook their new superintendent's hand, and accepted what they thought was a diploma. It was, in fact, a blank piece of paper. The reason Clayton County Superintendent John Thompson ordered more than 3,000 high school diplomas shredded this week after seeing his name wasn't on them. He learned it will cost up to $50,000 to reprint the diplomas. He started with the district just last month. He had the diplomas destroyed after he saw the former superintendent's name signed at the bottom. "Your superintendent should be on your diploma," he says. "We either give them two diplomas or get the right one mailed. We decided to have them wait for the right one." Thompson apologized for what he called a series of miscues by underlings. That's brave. The Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives apologized to U.S. Representative Bill Salley of Idaho for a misleading letter indicating he played a role in the agency's decision to drop its, quote, always think forfeiture slogan. The slogan was actually dropped after an Alaska senator complained. Salley claimed responsibility 2 weeks ago, only to learn later from news organizations he had nothing to do with it. The slogan was abandoned after the Alaska senator's complaint. 2,000 multi-tools, were engraved with the slogan and handed out to ATF training sessions for law enforcement agents. But lawmakers feared it would encourage agents to seize weapons from even law-abiding citizens. The slogan, again, always think forfeiture. In his apology, acting ATF Director Michael Sullivan conceded the agency had distributed 242 engraved multi-tools. Previously, the agency maintained none had been distributed. All right, then. That was inoperative. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen. Copyrighted feature of the broadcast for your listening pleasure. The father of the Pakistani nuclear weapon, who had confessed in 2004 that he had masterminded a nuclear proliferation program that had sold nuclear information and materials to, among other countries, North Korea, Libya, and Iran. Now, this week says, forget about it. It wasn't true. He says, in a rare interview with the BBC, A.Q. Khan said there was pressure put on him to accept the charges, quote, in the national interest. President Musharraf granted him a full pardon in response, although he remains, A.Q. Khan, under house arrest. Now, Dr. Khan tells the BBC's Urdu service, serving Urdus, these are all false allegations. He quoted politicians and a former army chief who said the allegations against him were false, and there had been pressure on him to confess. When asked why he was put under pressure, he said, quote, if one person takes responsibility, you save the country, unquote. He says the stance of the new government is that it can't release him from house arrest because it didn't arrest him. Asked who was preventing him from being released, he said, there are guards outside, army guards. He has been allowed to leave, of course. A ban on him talking to the media has also been removed in recent days. Western countries are keen to question Dr. Khan over the exact scope of his nuclear weapon leaks. He said when the time comes, he might speak out about the circumstances surrounding his confession, but he says he will never cooperate with investigators from the IAEA, the International Atomic Energy Agency, despite fears the nuclear technology traded by his accomplices could fall into terrorist hands. Why should I talk to them, he says. I'm under no obligation. I have not violated international laws. Details of his clandestine nuclear supply network were, quote, my internal affair and my country's affair, unquote. Pakistan is celebrating the 10th anniversary this week of the test that catapulted the nation into the nuclear club. Reports that nuclear technology were smuggled abroad were, quote, Western rubbish. And unfavorable accounts of his life were, and I'm paraphrasing here, poop piles. It doesn't bother me at all. They don't like our God. They don't like our prophet. They don't like our holy book, the Quran. So how could they like me, unquote, A.Q. Khan. International nuclear investigators paint a very different picture. This week, the IAEA, in fact, received more information and evidence linking Pakistan with Iran's nuclear program. Dr. Khan, though, says nuclear technology was freely available in the West to Iran or North Korea. They were supplying to us, they were supplying to them, to anyone who could pay, he says. Supporters say he was made a scapegoat for Pakistani generals involved in nuclear trading. George Tenet, former head of the CIA, has described Khan as, quote, at least as dangerous as Osama bin Laden. Well, he's under house arrest, too. Kind of. Free to roam. The area of Pakistan he's in, kind of the same. So A.Q. Khan says the confession was, quote, handed into my hand. Best place to hand something. We'll see. But now, ladies and gentlemen, news from outside the bubble. From the Guardian newspaper, on a related subject, nuclear bomb blueprints and manuals on how to manufacture weapons-grade uranium for warheads are feared to be circulating on the international black market, according to investigators tracking the world's most infamous smuggling racket. Alarm about the sale of nuclear know-how follows the disclosure that the Swiss government, acting under U.S. pressure supposedly, secretly destroyed tens of thousands of documents from a massive investigation into nuclear smuggling. The information was seized from the home and computers of Urs Tinner, a 43-year-old Swiss engineer who's been in custody for almost 4 years as a key suspect in the nuclear smuggling ring run by AQ Khan. The Khan network trafficked nuclear materials, equipment, and know-how. Swiss President Pascal Couchepin stunned his compatriots by announcing that the Tinner files, believed to number around 30,000 documents, had been shredded. According to him, the shredding was warranted to prevent the documents getting into the hands of a terrorist organization or an unauthorized state. But, says Mark Fitzpatrick, an expert on illicit nuclear networks at the British-based International Institute of Strategic Studies, we know copies were made. Both U.S. intelligence and the IAEA had been pursuing this with great urgency and diligence. But what happened to the other copies he made? It is worrisome there are other plans floating around somewhere out there. Testimony at the 2006 trial of another Khan network suspect in Germany alleged that Tenner told investigators he had nuclear bomb designs at his office in Switzerland. The blueprints were in digital form and are believed to have been copied onto the network's computers in Dubai, the hub for the Khan operation. It's amazing these people had so much information, incredibly sensitive stuff on nuclear weaponization and gas centrifuges, says David Albright, a former UN weapons inspector. I'm sure the U.S. got a copy, but who else got the documents? Can you believe these two, the brothers, Marco Tinner is also in custody, were the only ones who got the stuff? Khan told The Guardian the Swiss case proved that anyone seeking a nuclear bomb could easily obtain the wherewithal in the West. The Americans may have been involved in the destruction of the document because Tinner is believed to have also been working for the CIA. Albright said Tinner was recruited by the American agency from 1999-2000. The Swiss were doing other people's dirty work, says an international officer familiar with the investigation into the Khan network. The allegation is that Urs was on the CIA payroll for a very large sum of money. Confusing? You be the judge. The documents unearthed in the Tinner investigation were so explosive, said the Swiss government, that it was obliged to destroy them as a non-nuclear state that is signatory to the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. From the Times of London, owned by Rupert Murdoch, but who isn't, one of Britain's most senior policemen has said that the government, meaning the British government, should negotiate with Al-Qaeda in a strategy to end its campaign of violence. In an interview with The Guardian, Sir Hugh Orde, head of the police service of Northern Ireland, said he could not think of a single terrorism campaign in history that ended without negotiation. He said 30 years of tackling the IRA convinced him that policing, detecting plots, and arresting people was not enough alone to defeat terrorists. He said, if you want my professional assessment of any terrorism campaign, what fixes it is talking and engaging and judging when the conditions are right for that to take place. Is that a naive statement, he asks himself? I don't think it is. It is the reality of what we face. If somebody can show me any terrorism campaign where it has been policed out, I'd be happy to read about it, because I can't think of one. Unquote. Sir Hugh admits that negotiating with terrorists means thinking the unthinkable, and said that some of the biggest risks his officers took were talking to people that historically, quote, they would not have dreamed of talking to. Unquote. He cites his meeting in 2004 with the Sinn Féin leader Gerry Adams as an example of how one-time enemies can become partners in peace. As to talking to Al-Qaeda, he says, quote, I think the question will be one of timing. Well, timing, babe. The secret. From the BBC, in the 1950s, the Chancellor of the Exchequer, that's equivalent to our Treasury Secretary, Harold Macmillan, put the financial benefits of cigarettes over the nation's health. records now indicate. Then Health Minister Robert Turton advised the cabinet in 1956 to constantly inform the public of the facts of the link between smoking and lung cancer. But McMillan, who was later prime minister, said tax revenue from smoking was too valuable. The notes were released this week from the National Archive. In Q. News from outside the bubble, ladies and gentlemen. Copyrighted feature of this broadcast. This is Le Show, and now it's time, ladies and gentlemen, for me to read the trades for you. Not the ones that get contract figures so disastrously wrong. No, not those trades. No, this is from Media Daily News. 1 in 5 homes still not ready for digital TV. I'll read it for you. Don't thank me. And don't say you're welcome. With less than 9 months before the U.S. television industry converts to digital broadcasting, 22% of households are still either completely or partially unready for the conversion, according to findings of a report released by the Nielsen Company. The report concludes that 9.4% of U.S. households are completely unready and that the transition risks a significant number of TV viewing hours being displaced beginning in February when the nation's analog sets will go dark. Maybe they'll just sit there watching blank screens and finding that it's equally satisfying. That's even worse than reality television. Is it? Really? The report estimates that daily tuning among the completely unready population represents 6.9 hours on average. 7 hours a day from the people who aren't ready for the digital transition. And it currently accounts for about 7.5% of all daily television viewing and 8% of all primetime viewing. Nielsen estimates that 16.5% of total television sets are not ready to receive digital signals. Completely unready households have an average of 2.7 sets per household. Partially unready households have an average of 4.7 sets. The Nielsen report paints a potentially disruptive scenario for the TV industry, assuming that those unready households don't get ready by February. In fact, Nielsen is taking steps to delay the February sweeps next year to March to provide more time to deal with the dislocation that it could occur in hundreds of thousands of households that are the basis for TV ratings. In Milwaukee, 18.3% of sets are completely unready. Salt Lake City, 18%, and Portland, 17.3%. In New York, it's only 3.8%, and Atlanta, 4.1%. Demographically, the Nielsen report spells out another potential problem, noting that the least prepared audience segment are men 18 to 24 years old, a group that's in especially high demand among some advertisers. According to the new Nielsen report, these young men are 27% more unready for the transition than the rest of the population. It's a digital wonderland, ladies and gentlemen. And it seems only more wonderful when I read the trades for you. Copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Ladies and gentlemen, the number of U.S. troops diagnosed by the military with post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD, jumped nearly 50% last year over the previous year. Pentagon released the data this week. The increase brings the total number of U.S. troops diagnosed by the military with the ailment after serving in either Iraq or Afghanistan to nearly 40,000. The vast majority of those diagnosed served in the Army. Marine Corps had the second highest number. Some of them deal with their stress by handing out John 3:16 coins. Military officials caution that the numbers represent only a small fraction of all service members who have PTSD, because not included are those diagnosed by the Department of Veterans Affairs workers or civilian caregivers, and those who avoid seeking care out of concern over stigma or damage to their careers, says Lieutenant General Eric Schumacher. Sorry. We're in our infancy right now, fully knowing what the extent of this is. He is the Army Surgeon General. Service members with PTSD often feel constantly under threat, experience nightmares or intrusive thoughts in which they relive the horrors of losing comrades or being wounded in combat. One of the causes, according to the Pentagon officials who released the figures, is that more of these troops are serving lengthy and repeated combat tours in Iraq and Afghanistan. And back to Scott McClellan. You've heard, no doubt, aside from his apology to Dick Clark, Scott McClellan is the author of a new book, which takes a I think it's fair to say a jaundiced view of life inside the White House. Some are welcoming it. Some are critiquing it severely. Among the latter are those in the White House and those in the conservative media. And, surprisingly perhaps, Bob Dole, who wrote a Dear Scott email to McClellan this week, blasting him as a miserable creature. Quoting Bob Dole. In the book, McClellan depicts the president as being intelligent enough to be president, but intellectually incurious. What else is new? And depicts Vice President Cheney as the, quote, magic man, unquote, who accomplishes whatever he wants without ever leaving fingerprints. Quoting Scott McClellan in his book, which comes out, I guess, sometime this week. That's Scott McClellan's view of things. For another view of things, we might have to go beneath the surface of the earth.
Next, intimate tales of America's first underground vice president. The action-packed diary of the man who's just a heartbeat away from history.
Dick Cheney. Confidential.
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 Memorial Day is always a solemn kind of occasion around the secure undisclosed. A time for respectful remembrance of the other priorities that kept me out of the Vietnam conflict. I honor those priorities and the sacrifice they entailed in preventing me from serving in the military. But somebody else's memories were causing me a lot more difficulties this week. Scott McClellan, an agreeable little fellow when he worked as the tip of our media spear, it turned out to have a disturbingly low price tag for selling out his longtime friends and handlers. For a $75,000 advance, Scotty had slapped together the most pathetic excuse for a memoir since Colin Powell's suppressed book proposal. Hell, if we'd known Scotty came that cheap, we could have found $75,000 Iraqi petty cash to keep him home and quiet. In any case, the media hacks that Scotty had abused on a daily basis were now overjoyed to give him more face time than a gay Republican. And Scotty was lapping it up like a poodle in Dubai. Of course, it fell to me to let Mr. McClellan know that we still owned the biggest hammer in the tool shed. But since he was fingering me in his book as the so-called magic man in the administration who could do anything he wanted, I felt a personal obligation to repay Scotty for his kind words by proving them true. So I left the secure undisclosed just to pay a little visit to the only man I know in politics who's meaner than me. Thursday, 10:17 a.m.
So, Mr. Vice President, I'd offer you something to eat or drink, but Bob Dole's not that kind of host. No. There's water in the bathroom if you want. Use a cold tap. Hot water tastes like rust.
No problem, Senator. I have a whole Navy squadron tend to my needs.
Yeah, well, of course you do. Back when Bob Dole was Senate leader, I got catered to pretty darn well myself.
Mm-hmm.
Not that I've got anything against smaller government, of course, but I had 14 assistants in the Senate payroll when Bob Dole was majority leader, and Just about the only thing Bob Dole had to take care of myself had to do with the plumbing department.
Well, thank God for that.
How's that?
Look, Senator, I hate to be businesslike here, but I do have an intelligence briefing at noon. I have to tell the CIA what we know about Iran. Uh-huh. So if I could...
Hey, Mr. Vice President, I know why you're here. John McCain's ticked that I'm supporting that veterans bill. Well, heck, he should know Bob Dole supports anything with the word veterans in it, even stadiums.
Oh, Senator Dole.
Yeah.
You know how much I care about the veterans bill? Less than I care about that probably valuable crystal vase.
Yeah. Lady got that in Bruges.
We're running it all hands on deck to respond to Scott McClellan's book. We need you to be part of it.
Scott McClellan?
Mm-hmm.
He was Ari Fleischer's caddy last time I was around the White House.
Yeah, well, that's what we thought. But that little Indian appears to have left the reservation for a few pieces of wampum. So we'll be rolling out the usual artillery.
Yeah.
We're puzzled. It's sad. It's not the Scott we knew.
Yeah.
But the president felt, and I agreed, or vice versa, that we needed a little something more. We needed Bob Dole.
Well, that's very flattering, of course. But Bob Dole's wondering, what can I do?
We'd like you to send a blistering email to Scott, denouncing his betrayal, coruscating his character.
Uh-huh. You want Bob Dole to call him a Judas?
We would have, but Carville's already milked that metaphor this cycle.
Yeah, gotcha. And email is a thing you do with a computer?
That's right.
Hmm.
It's a thing you do with a computer. Check.
Yeah.
We can write the piece for you if you want. Our kids can do anything from traditional Bob Dole meme to Fox News press release meme.
Bob Dole doesn't need anybody to write Bob Dole's emails. Might need somebody to help send it.
Oh, I think I can spring some of my naval personnel to help you in that.
Okay, but Mr. Vice President, I guess I'm still asking myself that same question I asked myself that fateful day during World War II. Why Bob Dole?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think I summed it up best when I pointed out that you're not one of the usual suspects. You're not part of our normal message force multiplication complement.
Mm-hmm.
We think it would be worth an extra ounce or two of newsiation that it's you sending this particular message.
Hell, I think it's news that Bob Dole is sending an email.
That too. And of course, Senator.
Yeah.
I hardly think it's necessary to add that with this message firmly in the send queue, those veterans' hospitals we're naming after you actually will get named.
Yeah, I get what you're driving at. Bob Dole knows a thing or two about how this deal works. Be glad to send an email. But your kids can write it.
Funny thing about that.
Yeah?
They already have. So Operation Slime Scotty got off to a rousing start. Maybe the guy you really want next to you in a foxhole is the guy who had other priorities. End of partial diary for the last half of May 2008. Sincerely yours, Dick Cheney. Confidential.
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 One had a heck of a view. Air Force One had a heck of a view. Looking down on the patchwork of the blue top blue, I went a walking to the water. We'll be right back.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, news from outside the bubble, isn't it?
Soft, listen to the war.
Makes my voice tremble just to hear that. An abrupt release of methane, a powerful greenhouse gas from ice sheets that extended to Earth's low latitudes some 635 million years ago, caused a dramatic shift in climate. Scientists funded by the National Science Foundation reported in this week's issue of Nature, the shift triggered events that resulted in global warming and an ending of the last ice age. The researchers believe the methane was released gradually at first and then very quickly from methane ice that forms and stabilizes beneath ice sheets. When the ice sheets became unstable, they collapsed, releasing pressure on the methane ice, which then began to degas. Pardon my French. The scientists studied this area in South Australia near Adelaide looking for evidence of abrupt climate change. Our findings document an abrupt and catastrophic global warming that led from a very cold, seemingly stable climate state to a very warm, also stable climate state with no pause in between, says geologist Martin Kennedy at the University of California, Riverside, who led the research team. What we now need to know is the sensitivity of the trigger. How much forcing does it take to move from one stable state to the other? Dateline Shimla, India, under the impact of global warming, about 30 meters of Gangotri Glacier and 5 kilometers of Khumbu Glacier have shrunk, while the temperature in Himachal Pradesh has gone up by 1 degree since 1970, according to the state environmental minister. Contrary to the widespread view that a warming world will bring more hurricanes, a controversial new study suggests the number of hurricanes could actually drop in the North Atlantic, according to New Scientist. Tom Newton and colleagues at the U.S. National Oceanic Atmospheric Administration's Geophysical Fluid Dynamics Laboratory in Princeton built a computer model to simulate the formation of North Atlantic hurricanes. They found the model predicted fairly closely the number of North Atlantic hurricanes over the past 25 years. They fed the model predictions of how Atlantic waters are likely to warm with climate change. Surprisingly, the model simulated fewer tropical storms as the ocean warmed. By the end of the century, it predicted the Atlantic will see a drop in tropical storms of 27% and a drop of hurricanes of 18%. By that New Orleans land now, ladies and gentlemen. And the Bush administration's U.S. Climate Change Science Program, commissioned by the Agriculture Department, says global warming is already affecting this nation's forests, water resources, farmland, and wildlife, and will have serious negative consequences over the next 25 to 50 years, a report from our own federal government. Who'd have thunk it? News of the Warm, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast.
We said our goodbye the night before. Love was in your eyes
the night before.
Now today I find you have changed your mind. Treat me like you did the night
treat me like you did the night before. When I held you near, you were so sincere. Treat me like you did the night before. Last night is the night I will remember you by. When I think of things we did, it makes me wanna cry. Were you telling
Here, I'm going
to
get you.
Thank you, Katie Couric. Consider me gotten. Ladies and gentlemen, just making sure you knew that while the lead on the story this week was that the UN's nuclear watchdog agency said Iran continues to thwart efforts to obtain crucial documents that could shed light on the past activities of its nuclear program. That's past activities. The report also said inspectors have found no evidence that Tehran is currently attempting to divert its nuclear program to military use, and that its civilian nuclear program has made slow progress in recent months, despite the claim by Iranian leaders that the program is making larger strides. So be afraid, be very afraid. See, what Roosevelt forgot to say is the only thing we have to fear is fear itself, and it's scary. Well, that's going to conclude this edition of the show, don't it? The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations, over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world, through the facilities of the American Forces Network up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, 7.415 megahertz, on the mighty 104 in Berlin on XM and Sirius satellite radios, around the world via the internet at two different locations on your computer, live and archived whenever you want it, harryshearer.com and kcrw.com, available as a free download at www.audible.com/leshow and available as a free podcast at kcrw.com. And it would be just like really being scared some more if you'd agree to join with me then. Would you already? Thank you very much. You can find the email address for this broadcast as well as the playlist for the music played on this program, normally, sometime, at harryshearer.com. Find the video for 935 Lies at mydamnchannel.com right now. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless. And remember, the best political team on television isn't on television, and it isn't a team. So long.